The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
With the weather heating up, cool yourself down with the refreshing Club Mexican Pale Ale of Radio Alice's New England DDH IPA in this month's Beer 52 case. Perfect for the weekend's barbecue or day spent at the beach.
And if you're like me and you like darker beers, you can get yourself the mixed case. If you like lighter beers, get the light case. It's so easy. You can try your first case for free. You just have to pay $5.95 postage. That's eight incredible craft beers, Ferment Magazine, and a snack delivered the next day shipping. It's a no-brainer. So right now, there's no minimum commitment, and you can take just the free case. There's nothing else you have to sign up for. You try the beers and see what you think. If it's not for you, you could pause, cancel at any time.
Yes, so just go to www.beer52.com/believe and claim your free case today. Beer52.com/believe. Free case of beer. You are welcome. All right, let's start the show.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the f*** up.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
All right, guys, welcome to another episode of Believe You Me. Luis J. Gomez in New York. I'm here in Cali. I'm very tired, Luis. I just flew in from doing the Contender last night. It was a late night. I got back. It was about 12 o'clock when I got back. Couldn't sleep. So I took some ZQL. You ever taken ZQL, Luis?
ZQL? Is that like generic NyQuil?
Yeah, it's a sleep aid. It's the sleepy version of NyQuil. It's designed to put you to sleep.
No medicine, just the sleepy stuff. Whatever puts you to sleep. Got it. Yeah, look, I've been known to take some sleep aids after long nights of partying on things that would keep me up all night.
That is not what I'm saying. That is not what I'm referring to. I took a generic over-the-counter ZQL thing, and Jesus Christ, I tell you what, it leaves you very, very drowsy the next day. I've had two coffees. I'm still not out of the drowsiness, out of the cloudiness. So if I'm not on my sharpest form or I'm slurring my words, there you go. That's why. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. And to be honest, that's a good thing. I think overall, see, Michael Bisping, you're such a professional that I like to see you with a little bit of
handicap.
Not even a handicap. It's just a different state of mind. You know, some people smoke
weed. It's a handicap. It's a handicap. You want to slow me down. You want to bring me down to your level. That's okay. You want to handicap me mentally.
Well, maybe your mind works so fast that you need to be slowed down to everyone else's level.
Well, I'll take that not as an insult, but not as a compliment either. But you're right. My mind does work a million miles an hour. I think you have the same problem as well. But anyway, they don't want to hear about that. I was in Vegas last night doing the Contender series. I know you didn't watch it, did you, Luis?
No, I don't.
So your good friend is taking over the commentary world, taking it by storm, and you don't even think about just, you know, checking it out for a minute. Yeah, I mean, what did you do last night? What did you do? Were you so busy last night that you couldn't just tune in for a split second?
Yeah, I actually, last night I went to Uganda and bought a couple wells for children. So maybe you should have a little bit of respect for the fact that I didn't spend my time watching you speak or listening to you speak. How little respect would you have for me, Michael Bisping, if I was like, Mike, oh, just so you know, I listened last night, and when you said this, it was so cool and so funny. Yeah, that's fucking Harrington's job. I'm sure Harrington watched the Contender series. Guaranteed he watched them.
They've got fucking Fight Pass in Uganda. I guarantee it. I guarantee there's Fight Pass in Uganda. You just need Wi-Fi. Are you saying the people of Uganda don't have Wi-Fi, Luis? Shame on you. Shame on you.
I'm saying they might not even have electricity. I don't know. The only thing I know about Uganda is Kamala, the Ugandan giant from the old school WWF. You know, he used to have like the moon painted on his stomach, and it was the most racist character ever. It was a guy from Jersey that they were like, we're going to pretend you're an African savage here. And then they would fucking paint him, and he would go into the microphone. And that was his whole character, was just some dude doing a racist African character. So
I mean, that does sound very, very racist, and you wouldn't get away with it in this day and age. Funny, the things that used to be acceptable, isn't it? When you think back, they just wouldn't fly now. But no, I've told you time and time again, I don't know anything about professional wrestling, Lewis, but you like to throw out those little obscure wrestling references as if I'd pick up on them, but I don't.
I don't know anything about mixed martial arts, and we do this show twice a week. So we're going to talk about some shit we don't know about, baby boy.
Bro, you're an undefeated professional. What are you talking about? I skipped past this. We were going to talk about some other stuff, but I was in England last week doing the book tour, and I'm not going to talk about that. Try and stroke my own ego and say how amazing I am and the book tour was. And it may or may not be a Sunday Times bestseller that comes out this Sunday. I've got pre-notice that we are the bestseller Sunday Times. So, you know, congratulations.
Wait, the number one? The number one?
I think so.
No.
I think so.
Impossible.
Brother, ye of little faith, the believers were out in force. Let me tell you, we did two signings and they were absolutely mental. And thank you to everybody that made the effort. In Manchester, the one, people waited in line for like 7 hours. It was nuts. I felt terrible. But anyway, the point of it, the amount of people that came up and made references to the podcast, right? I must have talked, I don't recall it. I must have talked about not wanting to shake people's hands because they're sweaty. Right, and the amount of people that came up, I went to shake the hand. Here's how it goes. They come up, shake your hand. Hey, how are you? Nice to meet you. They have the book, you sign it. You have a little chat. You do a picture. You know, you give them some time. You make them feel good. And you get to meet them and whatever. And then you go to the next person. The amount of people that came up, and when I went to shake the hand, they went, no, fist bump. I listened to the podcast, Michael. And by the way, I've got you a present. I've got you some hand sanitizer. I swear to God, at the end of both signings, there was about 15 bottles of hand sanitizer.
It's so funny. My fans that come out from my podcast, they're not handing me hand sanitizer after shows.
The opposite.
Yeah, it's like, dude, they shake my hand, they give me a disease or two, and sometimes there's some drugs in my palm when they walk away. The fans are, I tell you right now, I know for a fact that they're very rabid, because I go to your Instagram sometimes and I see the amount of comments. I would say at this point, half of the comments on your Instagram are people making comments about your half mansion. Yes. Making comments, just little references from the show. So the fans are insane. And I know we've talked about it a lot. We're going to start doing some live shows. We're just trying to figure out the logistics. It's not, me and you are both very busy, so it's difficult for us to just sort of throw these things together. We're opposite sides of the country. But for those of you that love the show, I think that we offer something pretty unique in terms of a live experience. And we are working on some stuff. So if you guys are waiting for it, I promise you, just, you know, don't worry, we will be coming out there sooner or later. What was your fondest memory from the book tour this past week?
Oh my word. I mean, there was a lot of great memories, but I sent you a couple of videos, Harrington, of this man in particular when I was at Manchester. Oh, no, sorry, pardon me. This is when I was at the one in Kent at Bluewater. He came over and he had a present for me. And, you know, I mean, this is an internationally recognized honor that he gave me. But do you have that queued up and ready to go, Harrington? By any chance, this is your moment.
All right, go on.
Michael Bisping, this is your most prestigious award you've ever had in your life, yeah? This right now is Michael the Count Bisping, most flawless segue.
Oh, my God!
Oh, the most flawless segue in podcast history, and I got a trophy for it, so God bless that man and his family. And then he says to his daughter, he says, where's he going to keep it? And she goes, in his half mansion. It was so cute. It really was. So thank you to that guy and his kids. That was very, very beautiful. Yeah, that was amazing.
That's awesome, man. That's really nice. Let me show you on the other side of it. What was your worst memory from? Because you meet some fucking weirdos. You have 1,000 people waiting to meet you. You know there was some weirdo that couldn't make eye contact, that looked like he had a gun in his pocket or some shit.
No. Well, it wasn't a weirdo, but this is very, very weird. Okay. So I'm walking up the Trafford Centre in Manchester. Okay. It's a big mall. It's the biggest mall in the area. Right. And I'm not blowing smoke up my own ass. There was a lot of people there. I was very, very impressed. And thank you to everyone that came out. You made me feel very special. But as I said, this is this huge long line and people waiting for hours and hours and hours. And as I'm walking up to the bookstore, right? And there's all the people there. I want to say hi to them all first, let them know that I'm here. Not like just appear through the back entrance and not see them. I went out and thanked everyone and give them a little wave and see you soon, guys, all that type of thing. And I spot this very, very large person standing in the middle of the line. And that very large person is my father, okay? And he's deep in the line. I'm like, Dad, what are you doing? You don't need to wait in line. You don't need to queue up to meet your son. I said, come on in. He said, now, son, I'm right. I want to stand here. So he stood there and waited in line with everybody. Now, the line, you know, like at fairgrounds, it kind of zigzags like that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? My dad was kind of in the middle of like a square of people. And every person that came in, oh, my dad had been entertaining everybody, telling them home truths, telling them stories about me when I was a fucking kid and stuff. But that was one of the last people to come in. I said, again, Dad, what are you doing waiting in line? You've been there for about 4 hours. I said, and also stop telling strangers my personal business at my book signing. You do not need to be telling them of stories of things that I did when I got in trouble at school, maybe when I got into fights. So that was it was a little strange, but thank you, Dad.
It's because your dad is, if he's hanging out behind the thing, he's not able to get any of those accolades. Your dad, he gets to soak it up a little bit. Maybe, you know, maybe get some groupie action. He'd be like, you know, they have the roadies and the girls have to see him first before they can meet Mr. Bisping. So that's what I would be doing if I was your dad.
Well, that's what my dad used to do at all the UFC events. Him and Mick. My dad's 6'6", and his little mate, Mick, you know, he's not mentally challenged. He's a height challenged person. You know, he's a little person. He's very, very small. And my dad's 6'6", so together they're quite the duo. And they would go to every UFC event. And thank you both of them for that. That was awesome. And they just park up at the hotel bar and they become like mini celebrities for the week. And they, again, just tell stories that they shouldn't be fucking telling to the greater public. You know, it's like certain things are off limits, Dad, okay? But no, they'd absolutely love it. So thanks to everyone that came out. Thanks to all the Believe You Me fans that were there. And as Louis said, we're going to make some plans and try and do some live shows for you and do a tour of England very, very soon. But anyway, all right, moving on. What have we got, Louis? What's going on?
Nothing much for me. I mean, my son, this is actually the first time this is the happening for me. My son is going away with his mom tomorrow. That's not the first time that's happening. She does that, you know, once or twice a year. She brings him on a little trip, but
yep.
This is the first time that he's leaving tomorrow and he's gone for a week. It's the first time where I'm like, you know what? I'm happy to be rid of him for a week. I'm happy to not have him in my life. And it's just because he's turned a corner recently and he's the sweetest kid in the world. But at this point, he's just becoming a little annoying. I don't know, maybe around six and a half is they just hit Hold this on. Thing where they got to make noise at all times. They want attention at all times. It's a lot.
The cutest little kid I've ever seen in my life, Louis.
He might be.
He really is. He's so cute. I see him playing the drums on your Instagram. I see you making sweet music together. But inside in his mind, he's like, oh, my God, I'm having the best time with my dad. My dad's awesome. Look at the great relationship that we have. But no, inside your mind, if we pull the curtain back, you're like, oh, God,
I'm looking
somebody
at the
take
clock.
His child away from
I'm
me.
I'm counting the minutes down for him to go to the fucking West Coast. Beat it. Freedom.
Lewis, that poor kid, you know, one day he's going to watch this back and he's going to be traumatized. He really is. Do you know what you sound like? And my wife hates this. When the kids are on summer holidays, you know, on the summer break, parents always say, oh, I can't wait for them to go back. Bloody hell, I've had the kids hanging around for 6 weeks. I can't wait for them to go back. And Rebecca always complains about that. She goes, what are they talking about? I love our children. And I love them being around the house. And I'm like, yeah, me too, babe. You know, but the main thing that I'll be honest, the main thing that I don't like on the summer holidays is, listen, to be fair, when they're at school, Rebecca gets up at 6 a.m. every single day without a shadow of a doubt. She's up before me. She does the breakfast. She does that whole thing. She does the school run. I'm working. I'm going off here, there, and everywhere. So my schedule's a little different. I get out of bed, you know, maybe half hour, 45 minutes later after Rebecca. So, but on the summer holidays, she takes full advantage of the lion. Ah. Do you know what I mean? He doesn't get out of bed. With her not getting out of bed, that means I don't get out of bed. And the whole house just becomes lazy bastards. You know, and you Americans, you're very much go-getters. And I feel like we're being judged by some of the neighbors sometimes. But I'm like, babe, you got to get out of bed early. Because if she doesn't get out of bed, she's my alarm clock. So if I'm lazy, I blame her.
Yeah. My girl used to be my alarm clock too. I would just fucking pound her on the head to hit snooze. I think Yeah, I haven't really been dealing with this. It's not the summer thing as much because he's only in kindergarten now. But
where was he going?
He's going to California. He's going right near you, actually. They're going
Where about?
Dana Point.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's just down the road there, half an hour away. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. It's just nice to have a little bit of flexibility and freedom. This summer is the first summer where I'm like, you see, because we do the podcast, so. Because I co-parent, I have a specific schedule that I have to stick to. That was the biggest thing for her is like having the schedule switch around, it fucks around. So when we do the podcast, if I'm with my son, I have to like find a babysitter, whatever it is. Sometimes I bring him and he'll be in the other studio or, you know, hanging out, watching TV in the lobby area. But now like, oh, this week I'm going to go to the beach. I don't even like the fucking beach. I'm just going to go because I get
without
to actually-
games. James, he mentioned when he was here, oh, I want to go to the beach, Daddy. Michael, Uncle Michael, can we go to the beach? And we never got a chance to do it. We never got a chance. But as soon as he goes, you're going to go to the beach. I mean, that's mean.
I told him a story. This is really funny, actually. So there was there's a kid in his jiu-jitsu class that's a fucking dick. This little kid he's the biggest dick you'll ever meet. And what he does is when they're rolling, he just tries to hurt the other kids that he's rolling.
Hold on. Yeah, that's the idea. That's what you do. You're trying to make them quit. Okay, you're trying to get your arms around them and squeeze their neck. You're trying to get their arm and bend it in half in the direction that it doesn't go until they go and they tap. That's the idea of jiu-jitsu, Lewis.
It's a little different, though. So when you're training with a training partner, especially if you're a little kid, right? You're not trying to hyperextend their arm. If your training partner isn't tapping, you're not going to go, I'm going to break his fucking arm. You don't want to tap, motherfucker? Well, you know what? Tap or nap. That's not what happens in a jiu-jitsu class, okay? This kid's that kid. So, if you're passing guard, you could just pass guard, or you can grind your knee into their ribs as hard as possible, and you could really try to make it fucking suck, right? When you go to grab behind their ear, this is what he did. The move that he did to my kid was, instead of going to grab his head to pass to go around him, he like cupped his hand and smacked him in the ear to grab his head. And he kept on doing things like that. He kept on pushing really hard and kicking really hard. The kid's being rough on purpose, and he's trying to hurt his training partners, which is not the way kids should be training, not the way anybody should be training. And I told him the story about you, because I said I didn't want him training with that kid anymore because the kid's a dick, and he hyper-centered a girl's arm, and the girl was like crying in class, and he didn't let go of it. And I told
Hold on. What was the story about me?
I told him about before your title fight, at the garden, you had a training partner that came in that wasn't training safely, and he hurt your rib before your fight, and that is the reason that you're no longer the middleweight champion. And then James said, wait a minute, Michael Bisping's not the middleweight champion anymore?
he's like, fuck that loser. He's dead to me. Dad, why are you still doing the show with him? Oh, God, that's funny. You know what? Incidentally, talking of that, I spoke to a lot of journalists last week, and they were asking me some questions. And
that's what reminded me of it. I just saw that.
I came clean with a story. We've never talked about that, have we? Have we talked about the live game I was going to do?
No, it's okay. You could recap it anyway.
No, it's okay. We haven't got too much time today. So I didn't realize we talked about that before. So that's why some people were saying they'd already heard about that. But yeah, well, listen, that's jiu-jitsu, Lewis. You know, and unfortunately, some people are like that. You know, the cupping of the head that you're talking about, Callum had that at a jiu-jitsu competition years ago. You know, when you're supposed to grab the back of the head, but as you say, rather than grab it, they slap them across the face really hard. And Callum was only like, what was he, like 11 or something? And he was doing this jiu-jitsu tournament. And this kid walked out. I think we spoke about this a while ago. He was jacked. He looked like he was on steroids, a cigarette in his mouth. You know what I mean? The kid had tattoos for crying out loud.
No, really?
I swear to God. He must have been like 15, 16 from a shitty family because he walks out. He was ripped. He had tattoos. He had stubble. I'm like, holy shit, the kid scared me.
Sounds hot.
Callum. Yeah, oh, I know he really was, you know. But I looked at Callum and I'm like, you've got this, Callum. And in my mind, I'm like, you ain't got shit. You're about to get annihilated. You're about to get destroyed. But then the kid was rough as hell and he did that same move. Whack! And he cracked Callum in the face like three times. I nearly ran onto the mat several times. And then afterwards, I did go and talk to the kid. I said, yo, what the hell are you doing? I said, go easy. I said, he's a little kid. He's smaller than you. He's crying his eyes out. You can clearly see that. You know what I mean? But yeah, you're hitting him in the face repeatedly and being super rough. You're clearly going to win this jiu-jitsu match.
Yeah.
And he just eyeballed me. This kid just eyeballed me.
And he said, make a move, bitch.
He just looked at me. So I said, fuck are you looking at? his dad runs over. I'm like, what's going on? I said, no. This kid needs straightening out. So I'm nearly getting into a fight with a 15-year-old at a jiu-jitsu tournament.
Did the dad,
because
the dad's now got to make a decision. Like, what is he going to do? There's nothing to, because I'll tell you, this other kid in the class, if his dad would have shown, a babysitter picked him up. If his dad would have showed up, I would have said something. Because it's like, your kid's trying to hurt the people that are supposed to be his teammates and his partners. And that's not how you fucking train. And James, I mean, credit to him, he didn't want to cry in the class. It was the last session, and I could tell James was upset. I could tell, and I said something to the coach after the class. Not even in front of James, I went up to the coach, and I was like, look, I don't want that kid training with my kid anymore. He hyperextended a girl's arm, and he's done like 6 or 7 times he's done that and other shit in front of me where I've seen it, him doing it to James and other kids.
Yeah.
So I was like, that kid's not training safely. He's going to break somebody's arm, and it's going to be a problem. And they were like, oh, yeah,
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Carry on.
No. But, and they were like, oh, he's got problems at home. And I was like, that's fine and dandy, but he's not going to fucking break my kid's arm. My kid's like learning. He's 6 years old. He's a little kid. But if that kid's father would have showed up in that moment, I would have, there's the emotion that I had in that moment. I mean, dude, because we walk out, and as soon as we walked out of the class, then James started crying. He was like, I just saw it on his face. I saw it on his face. He was like upset. And I was like, what's wrong? And as soon as he started talking about it, he was hitting me hard, but then he was saying mean things. And the kid was just being a dick about it too. It wasn't even just like, he was like mocking him and like, it's fuck, like 8-year-old fucking kid. Oh, it just makes me so angry.
I get it. You go to jiu-jitsu, your son's whining, crying, he's getting bullied. He's not carrying on the Luis J. Gomez name with pride and honor. He's acting, he's acting like a girl.
Yeah.
So you want rid of him. You want to send him away for the summer. And you're proud of this. You should be embracing this child and letting him know. It takes all sorts in this life. Not trying to get rid of him for the summer because you're ashamed of him. Just because he's not going in there and tapping out all the black belts, Lewis, you should still love that child. Not want to get rid of him. I'm embarrassed for you.
Yeah. Well, I am too. But he did good. I'll say the positive side of it is he got himself out of some nasty situations with this kid who's being like a dick. He got mounted at one point, and this kid's been doing it a lot longer. So the good side of it is when you get somebody that goes that hard, it sort of makes you elevate. But he's a boy.
I know. Listen, I'm messing around. Unfortunately, in gyms, it's always like that. There's always people like that. That's why I used to be very hesitant to train at certain places, especially once you get in the UFC, because every time you get there, you walk into a room, to a practice room, and you've got a target on your back. Because you might just go in there and you just want a light day drilling or whatever, but this is their World Cup final. This is their Olympics. This is their big moment.
This is their bragging rights. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Ooh. You want to roll? Oh, and they come at you with everything they've got. Because they want to go off and say, oh, yeah, fucking tapped him out. I got him 3 times, And you're just having like a gentle Tuesday afternoon. Yeah, I'll have a little play around on the mat, just work some technique. But they're going at you like a madman. And it used to happen all the time. And it's just bloody exhausting. Or if you ever sparred with anybody, they'd be coming at you as hard as they could. So that's why, certainly when you're a fighter, you've got to look for smart training partners, because those people are out there in all walks of life. So well, I'm very sorry to hear that guy sounds like an asshole. So shame on him.
I literally called him. I didn't call it to him, but I said it to the coach. I was like, that kid's a dick. I was like, there's no other way to describe it. He's a dick. He's trying to hurt his training partners. That's crazy. So anyway, look, let's take a quick moment and talk about Wix, which is an incredible, incredible service. We actually built believeyoumepod.com using Wix. Mike Harrington was the designer of that site. So you can go there and see how professional and clean it is and realize that even a partially mentally handicapped person like Mike Harrington could actually complete the task. Super easy. They have drag and drop technology that makes it easy for anybody to do it. A child can go and do it. You just add text, images, videos. whatever you want. And they call it ADI, Artificial Design Intelligence. You just answer a few simple questions and Wix creates a stunning website for you. Super easy to use, Mr. Bisping.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, ours is very nice. It's stunning. It's slick. It's professional. And as you say, Harrington did it using Wix. So if you have a business or content that you want to promote, you need a professional website. And we recommend building it with Wix. So all you got to do is go to believeyoumepod.com. And at the bottom, there's a link. Click on that link, believeyoumepod.com. Click on the link at the bottom and Wix will give you 10% off any premium plan. Remember, get taken seriously. Promote your content. Sell things online. Whatever it is you want to do, you need a website, believeyoumepod.com. Go to the link, click it, and you get 10% off any premium plan, Lewis.
And you don't have to buy anything. You can just build a free website right now with Wix. FYI, you can just go there right now, click on the link. You don't have to purchase anything if you don't want to, but if you want to do the premium site, meaning like no advertising on it or any, there's a lot more options for design, 10% off. It's super simple. If you're a business owner and you don't have a website, you're crazy. Do it right now. BelieveYouMePod.com and click that link. All right. We have a lot to talk about. We will be doing a second show this week, by the way, for you believers out there. We're doing one on Friday. I'll say in a, for a moment real quick, just go to our YouTube channel. Just search Michael Bisping Podcast on YouTube or Believe You Me Podcast. You can find it pretty easily. Subscribe right there. All of the latest episodes are available at your fingertips right there, both on iTunes, YouTube, Google Play, and elsewhere. Make sure you subscribe, rate, leave comments. We love reading the feedback. We answer the feedback on the YouTube comments. If you guys write positive things, you know, we will actually answer your questions and stuff. So please, you know, do that more often. Also, if you guys love the show, every episode we've ever done is available on demand at gasdigitalnetwork.com. Over 130 episodes or something like that. You guys can get them at your fingertips. Use the promo code BYM. Get a 14-day free trial, pre-release, ad-free episodes, uncensored, and more. Let's talk a little bit MMA.
Yeah.
It's not a crazy big news week.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to say, I mean, obviously we had a UFC, I think it was 240. Was it UFC 240 at the weekend?
Yeah.
UFC 240. Unfortunately, I didn't see it. I was in the UK. I was on that book tour. And that's kind of what I want to mention. You know, it is difficult in the UK to be a UFC fan. Of course, you can watch it afterwards, and I could have done it by then, but I was happy to get home, spend some time with my family. Yesterday, I was commentating the contender event, so I had to research. So I got back late Sunday night, and then I was researching for the contender. So I never saw the fights. But that is part of the problem that the UK has, because I was speaking to a lot of media out there, and they're all like, you know, what do you think it's going to take for the for the UK to catch up to the USA in terms of popularity for the sport? And I said, well, I'm not sure it will ever get there, because the problem is having live events that happen at 6 o'clock in the morning is very, very challenging, you know, and it's hard to grow a sport like that. Of course, the UFC, they put on localized events all over Europe, and those ones do help the fan base grow. And there is a massively loyal, hardcore fan base that do stay up or do watch them the next day. But we all know sports, they're meant to be watched live and on tape delay or recorded. When you already see the results on social media, it's not quite the same. But
there's nobody watching. I watched the replays. I was working Saturday night, unfortunately. So it's the same. And I was going to make that point, actually. When you watch the replay, nobody's watching, even if I don't know the results. Because what I'll do is I'll avoid spoilers. I won't go on Twitter. I'll tell my friends, don't text me anything. Don't let me know anything. If it's a minute behind, it takes away like 90% of the excitement. I don't know what it is. There's something about it, and it's why music, the industry, has turned into live shows. That's where they make all of their money now, because nobody's making money selling albums now. You have these massive events. Like, everything is on demand. You watch Game of Thrones, you binge watch it, you watch it all, you know, when you want to watch it. But the Super Bowl is the fucking Super Bowl, and it only happens once a year, and everybody's tuned in at that exact moment, and you feel that energy. And with a sport like mixed martial arts, where truly anything could happen, you want to be on the edge of your seat. Like, don't blink. There's no other sport that can say that with as much truth as mixed martial arts. Do not fucking blink, because it could be a 2-second knockout. It could be a 5-round war, and there's no rhyme or reason. It's not like Mike Tyson back in the day was just knocking everybody out. It's a pretty crazy sport for that reason. So I didn't get to watch it live. Holloway, Frankie Edgar, you know, somewhat of I don't want to say boring. I don't like calling fights boring anymore.
Oh, really?
That's the
So that's interesting, because as I say, I didn't see the fights, but I did read the reviews. I did, you know, obviously I was interested in the results. So, you know, I went on certain websites, MMA Junkie, all the rest of it, and, you know, read reports and things like that. And from all accounts, I heard that it was a really, really good fight. I heard that, you know, Frankie Edgar went out there, gave a good account of himself. It was clearly a victory for Max Holloway. But as I say, Frankie Edgar gave a good account of himself. Going into that fight, I favoured Max Holloway, of course. I mean, Max Holloway is awesome. He's the man on top of the featherweight division right now. He's the king. He's the champ. And he just seems to get better and better with every fight. But you can't count Frankie Edgar out. I mean, how was the fight? How did it go down?
It was just a decision. I mean, I also feel bad breaking down fights when you break down fights so professionally. There's no breaking down this fight for you.
No, I'm not going to break it down. We can give me your general thoughts. How did Frankie Edgar do? Did he get outclassed? Did he belong in there? Was it a close fight? Were there some back and forth moments? Did somebody, you know, general overview for me, doggy? I didn't see it. Please, I'm intrigued to know. I want to know what the great Luis J. Gomez thought of that fight.
I thought it was a pretty clear-cut decision for Max Holloway and just a lot of what we thought was going to happen, which is Frankie trying to get him down, not able to, and Max slightly outstriking him.
Yeah.
It was,
yeah.
You know, okay. it's sort of what you thought. I mean, you know, look, I love Frankie and I love Max, but I didn't feel as if there was any crazy fuck you moments in the fight. You know, crazy like, oh, shit, I'm on the edge of my seat. Am I crazy, Harrington? No, right? Am I missing something here?
Yeah, he's missing a microphone.
No, I mean, you're 100% right. To me, it felt almost like Max was taking it easy on him a little bit.
Really?
Yeah. To me, that was my biggest takeaway from it, was that it looked like a hard sparring session for Holloway, and it looked like a war for Frankie Edgar.
Hmm.
All right. Okay. Well, anyway, so listen, well, thank you very much. And shame on you for being so nasty to Frankie Edgar there, Harrington. Oh, I think Max was taking it easy on him. I think Max was showing pity. Harrington, show a bit of respect, please. My word. All right. So listen, we won't go down all the fights because I didn't see them, and that's kind of pointless. And we are on Wednesday now anyway. A new week is upon us. We've got Robbie Lawler taking on Colby Covington this weekend in New Jersey.
I know.
I'm excited for that, to be honest. I'm excited for that because I want to see Robbie Lawler shut his fucking mouth. Do you know what I mean? That's what I want to see.
Shut Colby's mouth.
Yes.
Maybe. We'll see. Yes. Colby is, Robbie is just that fucking dude. He can knock anybody's head off. He epitomizes don't blink, right? He's that guy.
Yeah.
I think Colby's going to be able to beat him. I'm really happy that you're getting me, Brian, and Harrington tickets to go on Saturday night. It's so cool of you for you to actually take your time to contact the powers that be. I know you're a busy man. You got a million things going on. For you to take that time out of your schedule and get us free tickets for this event, you know,
it's amazing that you know me so well that you would, without us even talking about it, you would just assume that, like, Michael's such a great guy. He's an awesome person. He's very giving. He's gonna extinguish his own contacts and his own use of tickets for potential events to send people on the other side of the country tickets for free without them even asking. I mean, you know me so well, Lewis.
I know. You're a very giving man. That's why I do the show with you. That's what I told my son. I was like, you know, I know he's not the UFC middleweight champion anymore, James. But the fact is, he gives. It doesn't even matter. He gives and he keeps on giving.
Well, I am the gift that keeps on giving. I want to ask Harrington about this. Harrington, I'm going to give you a chance to explain yourself. Seeing as we are talking about Tyrone, but not Woodley or Masvidal or none of them. We were talking about Robbie Lawler and Colby Covington. But I'm looking at the notes here. You got Masvidal and Woodley had a couple of picks, has a couple of picks, league of them hanging out, and Colby Covington and Dylan Danis took umbrage with it. And I'm like, ooh, big story. So come on, Harrington, what are we meant to say on this? Explain the story for one, and then, you know, let's make fun of you.
And also, why do you use the word umbrage? When have you ever used that word in your life?
It's so Shakespearean. Oh, they are taking umbrage with it.
Twilight of the evening in the sky of the what, Harrington? What?
I'm kind of smart.
You're not smart. Nobody has ever said those words ever. Nobody that's ever worked with Mike Harrington in the history of this network, podcast, the show, or anything has ever been like, you know what? Smart. That's how I describe Harrington.
Never. But please explain this. Explain the potential discussion you wanted to us to partake in.
So basically, over the weekend there was some pics leaked of George Masvidal and Tyron Woodley hanging out in an ice bath together. Give me one sec; I'll have those pulled up.
Go ahead.
Just carry on talking if you can.
Colby was reaching out to Ben Askren, a guy who he's had a number of words with in the past, saying, "I think we need new friends." Dylan Danis came out and said, for a guy who took down your training partner and then hit him with a couple blows after he was knocked out, it's shameful for you to be hanging out with him. Woodley responded, "Hey, man, we were shooting a commercial together. I don't decide who the other talent is. And, you know, I'm getting this money, dude. So fuck off."
And what the fuck does Dylan Danis have to do with anything? What is he?
What does this entire story have to do with anything? There's nothing there. Ooh, meaty discussion. Let's get into it. What have we got? Woodley and Masvidal are hanging out, doing a commercial together, and somebody takes umbrage. I don't think there's anything there. If that's the best discussion point we've got for this podcast, we are screwed. I think our time has come.
It's over. This is the last show, guys. Thank you for listening to the history of the Believe in Me podcast. This was the whole show in its entirety. That's it.
It's been how a lot
funny
of fun. It's
it been would a... be funny if we literally just ended there and never did the show again, just for like our own personal Andy Kaufman moment of like they just ended it there. It was psychotic.
But I don't think it would be. I don't think it would make massive news. It'd just like fizzle away into obscurity. People would probably be like, "Oh yeah, remember they used to do that stupid podcast that was always connection issues and they were arguing and they'd give Harrington shit? You know that podcast that was definitely not 1080p? Yeah, yeah. I remember it vaguely, but, you know, they'd get on with it. No one would care, Lewis. It wouldn't be big news."
Well, look, Masvidal, would you be upset? You know, one of your training partners, there's a picture taken of them hanging out. Or is that, I think that's a little childish in general. That as a man, how do you go like, "I'm mad that you're hanging out with another man"? Like, come on, we're not middle school girls.
Yeah, exactly. At the end of the day, it's not like they were hanging out. I mean, if they were being old pally with a guy that had just knocked me out, then maybe it might hurt a little bit, you know? But if they're doing, you know, a business thing together, if they're both sponsored by CBDMD, which is the company in question, and they're doing a photo shoot together or whatever it was, or making a commercial, listen, it's business at the end of the day, simple as that. So I get it. There's nothing really there. But what else have we got? What have we got to talk about? We got anything meaty, anything good going on in the world?
It's not a very meaty week. There was that video, a couple boxers died, right, in the past couple of weeks? Another one, the one video you posted on your Instagram, I'm not a boxing fan at all, but I saw it on Rogan's Instagram as well, was the cornerman arguing with the guy as he's, you know, very, very out of it, obviously taking a lot of damage, saying that he's going to stop the fight, and the guy's telling him not to. Well, I feel bad because I'm not getting
their
names.
What was his name again? What was his name? Because, yeah, I feel bad. So, Harrington, or Maxim Dadashev. Dadashev, I think that's the guy we're referring to here. Yeah, it was awful. I saw it on, I'm not sure whose it was. I reposted it. It was powerful, you know. His cornerman is in the, I think it was the 10th round or the 11th round, and the cornerman's imploring him, saying, "Listen, I'm stopping the fight. You're getting hit too much. Oh, yeah, play it. Let's take a look. This is awful."
"Okay, I'm going to stop the fight. Max, I'm going to stop it. Max, you're getting hit too much. You're getting hit too much, Max. Please, Max, please, let me do this, okay? Okay? Look at me. Please. Please, you're getting hit too much, Max. If I don't, they're going to do it. You understand me? If I don't, the referee's going to do it. Please. Please, Max."
It's the final round, wow.
"Come on, Max, please. Come on, you got to be honest with me, Max. Doc, actually stop it, Doc."
They do stop it, though.
Yeah, yeah. I was just Googling his career because, unfortunately, you know, I wasn't particularly familiar with him. I mean, that is just heartbreaking to see. I mean, you see something like that, and that is like something from a Rocky movie. You know what I mean? The coach is in the corner saying, "No, Max," and you can see the fighter. You see the fight in him. He didn't want to stop. He didn't want to give up. And it's just so sad because he's not with us anymore. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe he has children as well. I'm looking at his career here. Yeah, 14 and, well, his career was, sorry, his record was 13 and 1. I'm assuming that 1 is the fight that, unfortunately, that he took part in last week. But It's just so sad. So sad. And, you know, it just highlights, again, how dangerous this sport is. I mean, mixed martial arts, boxing. Unfortunately, you know, we've talked about this before. There is more deaths in boxing. We haven't really had them in the ring and mixed martial arts. We have had it actually in MMA around the world, but not in the UFC yet. But, geez, that just breaks your heart, doesn't it, Lewis?
Yeah, it does. It's particularly macabre. It's your word. Watching sort of like it's dark. The conversation.
Let's not put light on a bad situation.
It's not light. That's not light. I'm saying watching the video is very morbid. He dies from those injuries. He already has the injuries in that video.
Yeah.
It's like watching a person after a car accident lying on the ground. It's very chilling and bizarre and sad. And, you know, it's like.
Yeah,
you know, as I'm sending my son into martial arts, it makes you sort of question, like, none of it's worth it. And what you're building up in this kid, you know, my son I'm thinking about, right, is like this thing where it's like he builds these muscles and this mental toughness. And eventually he's like, no, I have no quit in me, you know. And that's what that kid right there. He has no quit in him. Even though he lost a fight already, he hears he's got one round left. He's like, no, I'm going to finish this fucking fight because that's a victory in itself. And
because that's like a moral victory. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, I know I'm not winning this fight, and I know that I've got no chance of pulling this back on the scorecards, and I'm probably not going to knock him out in the last round. But as a fighter, you're like, well, listen, I've gone through this much damage. Let me go out there for another 3 minutes. You know what I mean? Let me at least be able to say I went the distance. I understand that mentality because we have our pride as men, you know. But that's why coaches are there, to protect you from yourself. And respect to that cornerman. Respect to that cornerman because the guy... I mean, unfortunately, I didn't see the fight, so I can't comment too much. But he didn't look too visibly beat up, but obviously he must have been taking a lot of shots, A, because of what happened to him, and B, for his cornerman to be saying, listen, you're getting hit too many times. And the cornerman right there was totally thinking of his fighter, you know, and you don't see that enough in mixed martial arts.
Yeah.
Jason Perillo did that with BJ Penn when he fought George St. Pierre, you know, and it wasn't a popular decision at the time, but, you know, he was thinking of his fighter, and it's... It just breaks my heart to see that. I mean, that is the sad reality for all people that want to get involved in combat sports because these days it's cool and it's on TV a lot. That is, unfortunately, the sad reality of what you're dealing with.
Yeah, and a guy like that, who I don't know, but Russian fighter, boxer, my assumption is he's not a fucking, you know, born to some wealthy, rich family that he just decided to do this. This is probably something that, like a lot of young fighters, is something that they have to do. It's the one thing that they excel at. And from the time they're a little kid, it's the one thing that they're dreaming about. And to have the thing, I mean, look, you know, they say... I mean, I guess a fighter, if I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. You have kids, it's a different thing. But maybe... You know, they say dying doing what you love is sort of like the fantasy. So it's like, you know, maybe a fighter would want to go out like that, and that would be the way. But no matter what way you want to slice it, it's just such a sad thing watching somebody just trying to live his dream and getting killed because of it. And for Noah, there's nothing else there to be done. He just did what there. It's an accident, and it's built into the sport, and it's brutal, and it just makes you sort of appreciate. You know, it just makes you appreciate life, and it just makes me really sad. As a young guy, too, how young was he? He looked really young.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure. Part of me, I think he was like 28. You know, when you see that, Lewis, because people ask me this question all the time, and God bless his, you know, R.I.P. rest in peace, all that, and super, you know, sincere condolences to your family and your loved ones and everybody, because I can only imagine what they're going through. But people ask me all the time, would you let your son fight? Are we going to see Callum in the UFC? Of course, Callum's crushing it with the rest, and he's flying out to Manchester soon. He's going to be trying out for the Olympic team, the British Commonwealth team. And if he makes it, he's going to be flying all over the place, all over Europe. And people always say, is he going to fight in the UFC? And honestly, I'm not too keen on it. You know, I don't really want him to. If he wants to, I will support him 100%. But if James, when he was older, wanted to fight Lewis, how would you feel?
I mean, I'm very torn because I love the sport. And I think that he sees me. It's the only sport that he likes. You know, he doesn't watch any other sports really. And it's so obvious that he just likes it because I like it. I'm kind of in this world. But it's my job to protect my kid at all times. So anything that he could do to hurt himself, you know, dude, if he's at the park right now, I'm that father who is on his, like, literally just 10 feet behind him at all times. I don't take my eyes off him. Maybe it's because it's my only child, and you know, it's probably a little bit irrational. But yeah, I'm very torn because I love the fact that he's learning this martial art. Can you make it split screen again, Brian? I'm sorry. I just want to see Mike. I can't see
him. I hate that. I hate that when you go full screen on each person, by the way. Anyway, yeah. Carry on.
So, but it's like, I'm very torn because I want him to learn this martial art. And I, you know, he's in a position now where he's been doing it for 6 months. And I think if a bully were to actually get on top of him and start hitting him, I think he could actually apply what he's learned in jiu-jitsu already and get himself out of a situation. Very strong kid.
I mean, let's remember, this is the kid that's getting bullied in jiu-jitsu right now.
Yeah, but okay. That kid's been doing it longer. He's using jiu-jitsu to bully him.
Listen, this is the kid. We don't have to worry about James fighting, okay? He's going down to the namby-pamby jiu-jitsu dragon class, you know what I mean? And they're like, do-do-do-do-do, and he can't even handle that. So, he's going to be fine. I don't think he's going to be a professional fighter. You know, perhaps a poet, perhaps a dancer, perhaps, you know, something more feminine like that would suit James.
Yeah. Well, I like the fact that he has this muscle memory built into him, and he's been, but at the same time, like, you sort of have this thing now where he's like in this world of people that are trying to prove their toughness, trying to prove how alpha they are, trying to, you know, and he doesn't really need that. He doesn't need to, like, I'm just rambling here, but look, it's a difference between me. All right, you don't know this because you're a fucking fighter and you've been for basically as long as you can remember, right? Yeah. Men, when we walk down the street, most guys, we have a weird need to prove our toughness. There's a weird thing inside of us where another guy looks at you and you make eye contact with him back, and now you're in a weird thing for no reason. There's just like, because both of you, your parents didn't fucking hug you enough or didn't read you at night, and now you need to prove this toughness to the world. And I think fighters don't have that. You don't need to prove that you're tougher than most men walking down the street because you kind of know it. You know, you walk around with a different type of confidence. So I like the fact that I'm instilling that in my son, but I feel like it could bite me in the ass because if he comes to me one day when he's 13 years old, 14 years old, he's been doing jiu-jitsu for 8 years, and he's like, dude, I really want to do this. I really... Then beats my ass.
Fucking kicks your ass. You're like, James, out of your room. He's like, no. And then you walk over to him and he cracks you around the head. He's like, listen, Dad, and gets you in a fucking arm lock. Get out of my room. Make me a sandwich. I'll be here when you're ready. It's funny that you mention that because, you know, as fighters, we don't feel the need to walk around and kind of prove ourselves and puff our chest out. In fact, I'm the exact opposite, you know, unless you're having an argument and you get heated, then, you know, things change then. But generally, I walk around and, you know, I'm not trying to prove myself at all. It's the opposite. But people, other like alphas trying out alpha me, it's so funny. You know, like when I meet guys that are supposedly like they're in their circle, they're the tough guy. Do you know what I mean? They're the ones, they feel threatened by me. And so then they have to like show the world that they're not scared of me and they have to bust my balls. And I kind of get bullied. Do you know what I mean? Because they're like trying to be a dick with me to show everybody that, look, I'm not scared of him. I'm going to give him shit when I'm just sitting there, I'm being nice. I worked with a guy recently on some show and he just kept doing that to me. And if I wanted to, I could have just snapped his neck like a twig. Do you know what I mean? But he was just going on. And I was like, I'm going to fucking kill this guy. Why is he doing this? I'm like the worst person to do this to. Do you know what I mean? But he was trying to show everybody, look at me. I'm a tough guy. I'm giving him shit. And I was literally being so nice. And I called Jason Perillo. I'd be like, I'd tell him about it. I'm like, I'm going to fucking kill this guy, Jason. And Jason would be like, Mike, kill him with kindness. Just kill him with kindness. I'm like, yeah, you're right. So the next day I go in and I'm like, hey, how you doing? And I'd be as nice as I could. And he'd take that as weakness and just throw it back in my face and keep giving me shit. And this guy has no idea and he shall remain nameless. But I'm like, I'm going to fucking kill this guy. I'm going to fucking kill this guy. You know what I mean? But
name
honestly,
names. Who is it? Say it.
No. But you don't understand. You don't understand that type of stuff does happen a lot.
Mike, we got to talk really quick about Whoop. That is WHOOP. They're such a perfect fit for this show. It's a training performance tool that changes the way that you track your fitness and it optimizes your training. Basically, it has a heart rate monitor for your wrist and it connects to their app and it gives you the absolute best analytics and insights into your recovery, strain, and sleep.
Yeah, that's right. And after every workout, Whoop will give you a strain score that lets you know how strenuous your workout was on your body. Basically, it lets you know if you've worked out hard enough, smart enough, gives you all the analytics. And also, you'll get training tips based on your body's recovery time to take the guesswork out of how hard you need to push your body for the optimal training, the optimal fat burning zone, optimal cardio effect, whatever it is you're trying to achieve. They'll give you the stats that you need to actually conceive, believe, and then also achieve those. And with Whoop, you'll also get daily updates on your body's needs to rest, or if you need to go back to training, or if you need to take it easy. Overtraining is a real thing. And the coolest thing about Whoop is their built-in sleep coach. By wearing the strap at night, Whoop Sleep Coach will analyze your sleep cycles, your sleep quality, consistency, and provide optimal sleep times based on how strenuous your day was. For example, if my wife wore it, they would say she needs no sleep because she does nothing. If Harrington wore it, it would say, listen, never ever sleep again. Do some crying out work. When I wear it, it's like, Michael, calm down. You're redlining constantly. You are working far too hard. You need more sleep. You're doing too many podcasts, too many commentaries, too many movies, too many book tours. Take a break. Slow down. But I can't do it. Life in the fast lane, Lewis. That's what I'm all about.
Yeah, when you put it on, it just shoots an injection of X-Quil into your veins directly. They're like, calm down, Michael. It's time for you to sleep, baby boy.
It's Z-Quil, by the way. But if you go to whoop.com and you use the promo code BELIEVE, you can try it out. They'll give you 15% off for a 12 or 18-month membership. No, but seriously, if you you take your working out seriously, you take your body seriously, you want to sleep better, you want to train better, smarter, more intelligent, achieve the goals in training that you want to achieve, this will help you do it. It gives you all the analytics, the stats that you need. So once again, go to whoop.com, W-H-O-O-P, and use the promo code BELIEVE. You'll get 15% off a 12 to 18-month membership. Whoop.com, promo code BELIEVE. All right, cool. But anyway, moving on. So I do see in the notes from Harrington that Conor McGregor went on some kind of Twitter tirade aimed at Khabib Nurmagomedov last week. I mean, he just needs to get over it here, but here it is. Harrington, talk us through these, please, if you don't mind.
Well, essentially, you know, on Saturday night seemed like he was on one. There's a photo here. Herb, my man, he's trying to sniff my jock strap. Here it's fucking round one. Stand this shit up. Pussy fighter. Panic, panic. We all saw you panic. Shit yourself on the back of that bus. Riddled in panic. I might actually be the Riddler instead.
Oh, my God. I want some of whatever Connor's on. Holy shit.
Yeah, that proper. What else have we got? There was more than one though, right, Harrington? There was a few, wasn't there?
McGregor, he's got... Look, if you're going to party with somebody, McGregor's the guy because he probably has the best shit of whatever he's doing.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, listen, I saw them on his Twitter feed. Never mind, Harrington's decided to bring one up. There was a few there. But go on, Harrington, I hear you about to cough into the microphone.
Sorry, you check on the fighter that was illegally kneed in the head on the ground. Now get in the game of trying to prove the knee was legal with the fighter who committed the assault. He's essentially saying when they were on the ground in guard, he was illegally kneeing Khabib in the head. I don't know why that's something to brag about, but he talked about landing his knee in Khabib's orbital bone and bragging about it.
Well, listen, I mean, I don't know. What do you think, Lewis? I mean, I think at the end of the day, he's just bitter about the whole thing. He's sour. And to a certain, a little part of me, and I'm not sticking up for McGregor or kissing his ass because it's far from it. It's laughable. But I do respect the fact that it bothers him so much. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
It's obviously bothering him a lot that he lost because he's in the middle of the night. He's coming out with these tweets and it's a fight that happened almost a year ago now, but he still hasn't got over it and he still can't accept it and he's still pissed off and he's still dissecting it and looking at it from his perspective when the fight didn't go down like that. He got beat soundly from start to finish. You know, and listen, it happens to all of us. You know, some of us get beat soundly. You might have a bad night at the office. Call it whatever you will. But you've just got to say, you know what, fuck it, fair play, shake the guy's hand. He got me and try and get it back. And I think he's angling for the rematch and he's trying to stoke the fires and get interest in all the rest of it and possibly get Khabib to say something back. Because then if Khabib says something back and he goes back and forth, well, all of a sudden now they're in this Twitter tirade. But I'll be honest, I think if I'm McGregor, he's probably hoping and praying that Poirier beats Khabib in Abu Dhabi. Because if Poirier beats Khabib, Obviously, we all know Conor has that massive win over Poirier. He did it very, very easily. He made short work of Poirier back in the day. All right, it was at 45. It was a long time ago. But even still, if Poirier wins, there's a possibility of setting up that rematch, and that's his shot at an easier shot at the title. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, probably. Obviously, if you are in McGregor's team in his corner, that's all you want. You're like, dude, we want the Poirier fight. For the love of God. Let's just chill. Let's make that happen. This is such a winnable fight. But I think you don't get to be as successful as McGregor, as good as McGregor, as popular as McGregor without having a legitimate ego, a legitimate, like, you know, there's something about you have to believe you're great. It's not McGregor. I believe McGregor truly believes he could beat Khabib. In his head, I'm going to beat him if we fight again. I don't think anybody else believes that in the world but Conor McGregor. But I do believe that Conor McGregor really does believe it. So I don't know if it's just an angle. I think Conor, in his mind, he wants to avenge. He doesn't like Khabib. This is a fucking legitimate thing. He was embarrassed. He wants... Dude, I remember... Maybe you never deal with this, but how many times, like, throughout my years, there's been, like, a kid in middle school who embarrassed me, and I just play it over and over again in my head. Like, I was like, oh, I wish I could have another shot to fucking relive that moment. That's what McGregor's living every time he goes onto social media, every time he opens his eyes. He's got a son that he wants to show his son that he beat every man that's ever been in front of him. That's important to a guy, especially a guy who achieves that level of greatness. So I believe that McGregor believes that he will get that fight. And if he wants that fight, he can have that fight. It doesn't really matter.
Which fight? Khabib fight? I don't know if he gets that fight. Even if Khabib wins, I don't think he gets the rematch. The Poirier fight, definitely. I can see them doing that.
You don't think
Dana's
so?
Dana's been saying, well, I don't. From the UFC's perspective, they're going to do it. Because why? It was the biggest pay-per-view they've done. All right? And the rematch will be even bigger. Simple as that. Rematches sell, especially with the amount of bad blood, especially with what happened after the fight outside the octagon last time. You know, the rematch will be huge. So I just think Conor's got to win another fight first. But, you know,
I think Dana said Conor's not going to get an immediate title shot when he comes back. I believe this. Conor can do whatever he wants. He can walk in. And he will just pick and choose whatever fight he wants. I rarely give Conor credit. I rarely do. But I will credit Conor in the fact that I think if Khabib wins that fight, he's going to go, I want that fucking rematch. Stupidly. He should go stack a few more million dollars, get some easy fights, take some big money fights, do another Diaz fight. How great would that be? That's the fight. If I'm the UFC, if I'm Conor, from Conor's people, if I'm everybody involved, I want Diaz to win his fight, and we set up the third fight with Diaz, because in my opinion, it's probably even a bigger fight than the Khabib fight. That those guys were comparable. Who knows? Who knows it'll be bigger, right? It's such a huge fight for all the same reasons. The rivalry, the bad blood, the loss to him. It's a really, really compelling fight, and I want to see that fight. But I do believe that if Conor wants to fight Khabib again, he will literally make a phone call and go, I'm showing up, I'm fighting Khabib. That's that. And the UFC will go, yeah, whatever you want, Mr. Conor.
Yeah, maybe because A, listen, as I said before, the numbers were massive, so why wouldn't they want to do that again? B, people want to, the public will buy it. They will 100% lap that up. It all depends on whether Khabib gives it to him. Yeah. And honestly, Khabib probably would. So there is a good possibility. I'll tell you what rumor is doing the rounds is that a rematch at UFC 244 in November at Madison Square Garden, McGregor versus Aldo. Harrington, you put this in the notes. Where are we seeing? I did see this rumor online, but where is this emanating from? What is the source? What do we know about this? Or is it just something that's doing the rounds on social media right now?
Yeah, that's why I was very serious about putting it in the rumor section, because that's very much what it is right now. There's no substantiated sources, no big journalists coming out with it, but it is growing like wildfire on social media. Everybody seems to have the inside track on that being the fight for MSG this November.
Well, that's the fight to make, if I'm honest. I mean, listen, Khabib, I mean, Conor's got to get back in the winning circle. If he fights Khabib, more than likely, that's not going to happen. Could he catch him with a good shot and rock him and follow it up? Yeah, of course he could. But more than likely, Khabib's going to take his best shot. He's going to take him down, and we're going to have a replay of what happened last time. Aldo and McGregor, I mean, the build-up to that fight was huge, and it ended, you know, amazingly in 13 seconds, and well done to McGregor. I think people would love to see that because a lot of people feel that Aldo could do better in the rematch. And that's definitely a very winnable fight for Conor. Of course, we saw what happened the first time. The second time, who knows what's going to happen, but it's a very winnable fight. And if you can go out there and beat Aldo, because Aldo's looked sensational since that fight. You know, yes, he got beat off Max Holloway twice, but other than that, he's been perfect. He's
well, he just lost Volkanovski in his last fight decision.
That's right. I forgot about that, actually. He did lose to Volkanovski, and that was somewhat of a... It was a frustrating fight, you know what I mean? Yeah.
And Volkanovski might be that dude, to be honest with you.
Dude, Volkanovski's incredible. Volkanovski has got the best chance of beating Max Holloway than anybody out there right now, you know? Yeah. So for Aldo there. So that makes sense because Aldo's coming off a loss, McGregor's coming off a loss. Pair them together, Madison Square Garden, there's your main event. The winner gets the title shot.
Boom. Only way I want to see that fight is if they do it at 145. I want to see Conor go back down to 145. I'll say this until I'm blue in the face. I don't care. Conor McGregor, he was the king of 145. I know that cutting weight is a difficult thing. Well, guess what? MMA is a difficult sport. I think that you can reignite that storyline that Conor McGregor is the best fighter in the world. He can be the best fighter in the world at 145. Pound for pound is something that we talk about, right? So you can say, all right, look, he had some mixed results at 155 and 170, and he's a fucking, you know, oh my God, he went up and fought the bigger guys, but he came back down. He's never lost at 145. He's killed everybody in front of him. If they do that fight, the rematch, as Conor McGregor's return to 145 pounds to chase that title, I love it. I love it. If they're doing it,
not
just
gonna
to
happen.
If they're doing it to do it, fuck it. I don't want to see it. I don't care about it.
They're doing it to do it. That's the whole point. They're doing it to fight. Do you know, that's the whole point of it. Regardless of the weight class, they're doing it to do it, right? 145, 155. I'm telling you, he's never going to make 145 ever again. No way.
Aldo fights 145, though, right? Or did he never moved up, did he?
He does fight at 145. But McGregor won't go down to 145 ever again. I mean, I don't know. I'm just assuming. Once you've made that much money, you don't want to put yourself through that. I mean, he used to bloody almost kill himself to make 145.
Did he have tough cuts? You know? Was it like notorious that notorious?
I don't know. Oh, I see what you did there with the pun. But no, I don't know that. But he used to look like death on the scale. Remember that was back in the day when the weigh-ins in the afternoon, that was a legit weigh-in.
Yeah. You know?
And he used to look like shit. When you got that money in the bank, doggy, you do not want to put yourself through that. I know you've done two fights. I know you're an undefeated MMA fighter, but trust me, doing those weight cuts like that, oh God, they're horrible, man.
Hey man, I've been there. You were privy to my one and only weight cut.
Oh, I was.
You were <Christ. laughs> because Michael Bisping couldn't bring a scale. Just couldn't bring a scale. All we needed to do was bring a scale on the road. I could have popped out of the car, jumped on it. Oh, look, I'm fine. But now I'm in my head. It's like when you're running late, you got to go somewhere. I got to be at a poolside in a minute. I'm fighting for the first time in my entire life. But Michael Bisping didn't want to pack a scale into his car.
Yeah, you know why? Because that scale wouldn't have made it back. It would not have made it back, 100%. And then I'm the bum that's going to carry a scale all around Vegas with me. It's not your scale. You want to bring a scale? Bring your own fucking scale. Put out to Target. Spend the $15. Not effectively steal a scale out of the Bisping Tower, okay? If the scales in my house are designed for the bathroom in my house, and that's where they stay. And if you know, Mr. El Presidente of Gas Studios over there, if you want to take a scale to your big shot fight, dip down to Target, buy yourself one, okay? Leave mine alone. Leave them well-being. I like to step on the scale in the morning and see where I am. I don't want to walk into my bathroom and go, oh, yeah, that's right. We left it in Vegas. Right?
Yeah, you're right. You probably wouldn't have made it back from Vegas, but
it would have came back from Vegas. The scale will still be there. Somebody will walk into the Hard Rock Hotel Casino and walk in and go, wow, they got nice scales in this hotel. But then the next time they stay in a different room, they're going to be like, where's that bougie scale?
Yeah.
Where's that nice, aluminium, off, soft, shiny metal scale with the nice digital readout? Where is that one? We don't have them anymore. I said, it was a one-off. Somebody left that.
Well, I'm just saying. I would have had a normal weight cut. It would have been fucking fine and dandy. But you see what happens when you set off one little thing in my morning, then everything else goes out the window. You got to see the rage. Yeah, you got to see the true fucking alpha Luis J. Gomez. Michael Bisping had to sit back and go, holy shit, let me not get in the way of him right now. He saw what happened.
Let's remind everybody that it ended in Luis on his hands and knees at the hotel check-in in reception, on his hands and knees with his suitcase open, throwing the contents of his suitcase all over the hotel lobby. Everybody looking, thinking, what is going on right now? And I'm like, Luis, you might want to just get yourself together right now, okay? You're making a huge scene. Everybody's looking, and it's kind of embarrassing, Luis. I'm just talking you off the ledge right now, okay? Scale or no scale, just get a hold of yourself, doggy.
Oh, shit.
Anyway, all right. Should we do some questions? Next time we do the show, we'll have more to talk about. It's just a quick one today. What should we do, Luis?
Yeah, let's get some questions in. Obviously, if you guys want to join the conversation, shoot us an email, bympod@gmail.com. You can also follow us on social media, bympod on Twitter. Luis J. Gomez, Bisping. You could tweet us your questions. Video. We love the video questions. So if you send us a video question, we are more than likely, as long as it is at least somewhat legible, we will play it on the air and we will try to answer it as honestly as possible. Do we have a few video questions today, Brian?
All right. Let's have a listen. Let's go.
Hey, boys. It's Mike from Buffalo. I got a question for you both individually and then a question that I want you both to answer. And first of all, I love the show. Never miss an episode. So I don't think these are questions you got before. Luis, what is the best crowd that you've performed for? Love your comedy, by the way. And Michael, if I held a gun to your head and said, you have to come out of retirement for one fight, ooh, who would it be? And then question for both of you. What do Shannon's tits smell like? Oh, and one thing. Somebody roast this cat. Look at this motherfucker. Okay, thank you. Love you. Bye.
Wow.
I love it.
I mean,
I love
this day
that guy.
And age, it's very, very, very offensive. You know, whatever. Number one, I can't smell Shannon's tits through the Wi-Fi. I mean, the internet connection these days is fantastic.
The
production levels are going through the roof, but tit smelling, we cannot achieve.
That microphone, if you switch a little button on the side, you could actually smell Shannon's tits. That's a real thing. And that microphone we got you. It's a really high
sent it over.
Tech microphone.
Luis, what is the best crowd you have performed in? Go ahead.
Look, Legion of Skanks notoriously has the best crowds in the world, just period. Like, Dave Attell said that publicly. Bert Kreischer. I mean, all these major comics have come out and been like, yeah, there's nothing like a Legion of Skanks crowd. Joey Diaz, I remember last time at the Comedy Store, he came up to me afterwards. He was like, holy shit, you guys have the best fucking crowds ever. So I got to say, Skankfest, which is our festival we do every year, it's bananas. I mean, there's like, we crowd surf during live podcasts. Like, we're like rock stars for the weekend. The crowd is so into it. I've never experienced anything like the Skankfest crowd. So it's head and shoulders. And any comic who's ever performed at Skankfest will tell you the exact same thing. And Michael Bisping will be there next year. We're going to announce it nice and early. Right now, Michael Bisping, Skankfest 2020, making a Skankfest debut.
I'll be there, and I can't wait, because honestly, the videos that I saw of last time looked amazing. So that's great. That's awesome. And I will try and be there. Okay, if I could fight one person, I mean, as you were talking, I was trying to think, like, who is the most oldest, decrepit, you know, washed-up fighter that I could pull out of retirement, but that is, like, you know, credible? And I'm thinking, Randy Couture's got to be bloody pushing 60 now, do you know what I mean? But I'm like, well, hold on, it's Randy Couture. He was heavyweight champ, light heavyweight champ. That might not go too well. You know, it's got to be an easy fight. Someone that I'm guaranteed to win, do you know what I mean?
It's got to be 205. You're not making 185, so it's got to be 205.
Well, hold on. If Conor can make 145, I can do 185 again. What are you saying? Just because, you don't hold me to the same standards as Conor?
You don't have that same type of fire inside of you the same way Conor has. I mean, you know, he's a lot younger than you. You know, you're making two.
I don't have that drive.
No, you're an old man.
I don't want it.
You're almost 40. I think that you need, it needs to be an easier fight. 205 pounds. Oh, I got it.
Go ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, loser leaves town match, Michael Bisping, Brendan Schaub, catchweight, 225 pounds in the UFC. Loser has to quit podcasting. And then the other podcast, either Brian Callen will join this show. We'll have a third mic, which is awesome. Or I will join their show. which I think I could do. I could clean that show up. I could. I'm one of the best podcast co-hosts in the world. I set people up very nicely.
What do you mean you can clean that show up? What are you saying? What needs cleaning up about their show? They have a hugely, hugely, hugely successful show. We are a drop in the ocean compared to theirs, Lewis. You know what I mean? And you're saying that you're going to go over there and clean them up? And why are you always trying to set up fights between me and Brendan Sharp? We're friends. Okay.
You asked me a fucking question, and I answered that question. That's what I do. I answer things honestly. And if you want to be honest with you, if you want to know the biggest fight in the world to set up, that is the fight. Not for nothing. You versus Brendan Shaw would maybe be bigger than, 95% of the fights that the UFC could set up right now. If they set up a comeback fight, Brendan Shaw versus Michael Bisping, it does 750,000 pay-per-view buys.
Wow, that was loud. That
it really was
loud in my ears.
Holy shit.
It really was. I mean, I guess that is the idea of an air horn, but Jesus Christ. No. Listen, number one, my mate, he's retired, I'm retired. That's not going to happen. We're talking UFC fighters, okay? He's retired. He's long gone. He had the Rogan talk. We know this.
You're retired. You're long gone. And I tried to give you that Rogan talk. You wouldn't listen to me.
When did you try and give me the Rogan talk?
Episode 19, everyone. Go listen back.
It's the one where
Dito died right afterwards. I was like, you know what? Maybe it's time to hang it up. I don't know. Your dog's dead now.
Pet's heads are falling off.
You wouldn't listen to me. I tried to give you that talk.
You did. All right. What are the questions we got? Let's do another one. Let's see how long it takes.
Yet another Michael.
Oh, nice.
What's up, guys? I've got a 60-second challenge for Mr. Bisping. If you are successful, I will donate $100 to the charity of your choice. Go ahead and pause. I'll wait for you to select one.
I like this guy. This guy's a fucking serial. Pause it.
Dates, times, locations don't matter.
Pause it. So what is your charity?
Oh, hold on. This guy's like, what's he called off American Psycho?
Yeah.
Christian Bale character, you know, but his name, the character, he's that kind of character. Charity, cruelty to children is something that shouldn't exist. And I will do anything I can to stop that. So, or feed the hungry children. No child should be going
hungry. That's not a charity. There's no charity, cruelty to children, or feed the hungry children. Michael Bisping has never donated to a charity. And now that we are pulling the curtain aside,
whoa.
He can't even name a charity, just something.
No. I donate to charity all the time. We have direct debits coming out of our bank account. I give to every homeless person I see pretty much. I'm a very giving person. I'll tell you what I don't do, and this really pisses me off. When I'm going into massive corporations like Target or Ralph's or whatever, they're like, would you like to donate $1 to such and such? I'm like, no. No, I wouldn't. And I don't need fucking shaming from you. I've come in here to buy my product because if I give you that dollar, I guarantee hardly any of it is going to charity or to the people that need it. So I don't need shaming when I'm trying to buy some booze, okay?
They make you feel bad in the moment. Like you have to now feel bad about yourself and say no. It's like, would you like to donate to help children with cancer? You're like, no, I would not. Don't make me verbalize that, okay? It should simply be maybe a prompt on the screen. I see it sometimes. They do it in like a Duane Reade or a drugstore. It'll be like a little thing you could buy. And it's like an advertisement, the same way they have it in the section for gum, like an impulse buy type thing, where it'll say, oh, $5 you could donate. It should be that. Put it in my face, you know, have me sign my name on a thing, put it on the wall. That's cute. But don't actually ask me because it makes me feel like I'm a piece of shit.
He's trying to make me cry.
Exactly. Exactly.
Case that I feel like a piece of shit, it's more to me. I say no because these the scams, like when I used to be a door-to-door salesman a long, long time ago, you know, there was a branch of the team where I worked. They were going out and they were trying to get people to make charitable donations. The majority of the money that they would donate was their fee for getting that donation. Do you know what I mean? Their businesses. And if each charity didn't spend a certain amount each year on advertising and stuff like that, they wouldn't get the grants the next year off the government. So these charities are a massive, massive scam a lot of the time. So these ones, when like big old corporations are saying, oh, would you like to donate $1? I'm like, well, I'm assuming 50 cents goes there, 20 cents goes there. And by the time the admin and all the people, I mean, these non-profit organizations, they might not make a profit, but people are getting paid fat goddamn salaries from them.
Well, wouldn't, on the other side of it though, because I've talked about this in the past, like, let's say they're, you know, you go to most of these like nonprofits, right? Let's say it's just, you know, pro women's reproductive rights, okay? You get some fucking hippy-dippy.
Why is that going to be the charity that you pick?
Whatever it is. It's just a nonprofit, right? Like, you know, literally anything. It could be AIDS relief, whatever it is, yep. a nonprofit, right? The person in charge of that is some fucking hippy-dippy, I want to help the world kumbaya motherfucker who isn't a boss, right? What I would do is I would get the CEO for fucking Target or the CEO for Apple to come in and hire them, because what they're going to do is they're going to be able, it doesn't even matter. Let's say you have to pay them $1 million a year. What if they're making $20 million in profit per year versus the hippy dippy bitch with some fucking crystals and she's praying to a moon god that, you know, people will help out, and she's making a fraction of that. So I don't care if they're paying somebody more money. Same thing with Duane Reade. If they're taking 90 cents, but the net, you know, the net positive is they're making millions of dollars for that charity, then essentially it's only good. It's not bad.
Yeah. No. You're right. But also, you're lining the pockets of the CEOs, the people that run the charity, which isn't the idea. When you're asking for my dollar, I want to give it to charity, but I don't want to necessarily give it to you. Anyway, let's play this guy's question. We went off on a tangent there, which was interesting. But
the charity that we're going to donate it to, it's going to be Donald Trump's campaign for 2020.
Yeah, no, 100%. Donald Trump's 2020 campaign. They need $100 they can get. Yeah, $100. Let's go, baby boy.
Okay, here are the rules. Dates, times, locations don't matter. You must name, in order, every fighter you fought in the UFC and whether you won or lost, starting with your first fight on The Ultimate Fighter. 60 seconds, go.
Wow. 60 seconds.
Christian Rothermel. Hold on. Start the timer.
Start the timer.
This is a good one. I like it.
I love it. And let me pull up your record to check. I'm gonna check in real time.
You ready?
Tell me
when we're ready, baby boy. And I am not cheating. I'm not looking at my phone. My phone is here with a black screen. Okay?
Oh, racist.
This is fun.
I like games. I like games.
Games are good. Games are good.
All right, so starting with... Wait, who's it starting with?
Ultimate Fighter Fights.
So those aren't listed on here, so I will have to trust...
No, they're not, but it doesn't matter because I've got them in my head.
Start with the Ultimate Fighter. I have everything else. This is crazy. In order,
we'll
if you...
Get ready.
If you name them, it's $100 to Donald Trump. Let's go.
Oh God, the excitement is boiling. Okay, tell me when we're going.
And go.
Christian Rothermel, Ross Poynton, Josh Haynes, Eric Schaefer, Elvis Sinisic, Matt Hamill, Rashad Evans, Charles McCarthy, Jason Day, Chris Lieben, Dan Henderson, Dennis Kang, Vanderlei Silva, Carayo, Dan Miller, Akiyama, Jason
Sexy
Miller,
Yama. Wait, no.
Chael Sonnen.
No.
Let me finish.
You fucked up. You fucked up already.
Well, let me go. Let me finish it. Chael Sonnen. Who was after that? You've thrown me off with your interjecting, your interrupting, your noise.
You lost the fucking bet. You can't just keep going, we're going to ignore the fact that you missed the fighter.
Well, who did I miss?
And I can't believe it. I mean, the only Puerto Rican fighter in the history of the UFC.
Oh, hey, Rivera, El Conquistador.
You ruined that man's life. You ruined his life. He's done. He's had nothing happening since then. He retired a year later, had a loss to Carlos Philippou, got a win over Eric Ravishing Red Schaefer, and that was it. You fucking broke that poor man's spirit.
I'm just concerned for Donald Trump's election possibilities. I mean,
now it's it.
I was trying to get in that $100. Oh, well.
So do you want to keep on going?
What do you think?
Chael Sonnen.
Oh, all right. Chael Sonnen. Shit. Who was after Chael Sonnen? Brian Stann.
Yep.
Vito Belfort.
Yep.
Alan Belcher.
Fuck yeah.
Tim Kennedy.
Woo.
Kung Lee.
Goddamn right.
Luke Rockhold.
Take that, bitch.
CB Dalloway.
Ooh, I'm going to...
Talis Lighty.
It's a half a point taken
Anderson
away.
Anderson Silva. Luke Rockhold. Dan Henderson. George St. Pierre, Kelvin Gastelum. I mean, if that isn't a fucking who's who of MMA, I don't know what is.
You were so close to getting $100 for Donald Trump's campaign. We could have done
it. Just Jorge that I missed out on?
Just missed Jorge.
Oh, God.
That's how fights. That's how little you mean, Jorge Rivera. That's how little you meant
to Michael fights, so many continents, so many time zones. You know, it's hard to keep up with the moves. It really is. But anyway, all right. Well, sorry about that. $100 out the window. Good question, though. And if anyone else has any more games like that, that's good. That's fun. I like that.
I like a good challenge.
Good time. Should we do one more or should we call it a day?
No, we got one more. Let's do it. Fuck it. We got a few more minutes
Let's do one more for the guys.
This gentleman is Thomas Galdenzi.
Hey, what's up? It's Thomas Galdenzi from Houston, Texas. And I love you, Michael Bisping. I'm a huge supporter of the show, and I've been a huge fan of yours, Michael Bisping, since Ultimate Fighter Season 3. As you can see, I've always been supporting you, and I've loved watching your career as a UFC fighter and to watch you grow to the person you are today.
Pause it.
I tell everybody, you're the original.
Oh, my God. This guy couldn't be any gayer for you. Never have I seen a man who wanted to suck another man's cock more than I'm watching this man right now. We're 43 seconds into the video.
I'd be embarrassed if he did that.
He's not even fucking doing. He's still going on about. He showed a picture of a T-shirt that he fucking had. That is craziness. Just say, hey man, I like the show. I like the show. It is not helping you to do that to another man. It's not like the guy you're doing to is going like, oh man, you know what? This guy's awesome. I want to be his friend now. No, what's going on in Michael Bisping's head is like, all right, fucking weirdo, get on with the question. I know what's going on. I'm saying what everyone's thinking.
Oh, my God. How dare you? Shame on you. Don't be jealous, Lewis. This is a nice, intelligent, level, grounded human being that clearly knows what's up.
I agree with you, Mike.
Yeah, thank you, Daniel. All right. The very loyal listener to our Rinky Dink show, can we listen to the rest of the question, please?
Conor McGregor. As for you, Luis J. Gomez, I didn't like you too much at first, but now I'm a huge fan of yours, and I think you're hilarious. And I know you're one of the main reasons why you guys Believe You Me podcast is the number one MMA podcast.
Still think he's a weirdo?
Well, that was just a little bit of truth. And he didn't go off on a fucking 45-second rant about how he loves every hair on my body and he just wants to kiss my abs. No, he said, I didn't like you.
All of a sudden, you see him in a different light. All of a sudden, you're like, hold on a minute. Maybe this guy's got something. All of a sudden, this guy's intelligent, he's smart, and he's put together well, right?
Look, he tells the truth. At the very least, he doesn't lie. He doesn't lie. Yeah, he's like a lot of people. I'm a tough pill to... You see the comments. They'll comment on YouTube like, Lewis needs to die right now. He needs to die, and I hate him so much. This show would be the number one show in the world if it wasn't for Lewis. And then 4 weeks later, same guy. Look at his fucking comment. See what he says about me. Biggest gomite on the planet.
Gomite.
Another doggy, another baby boy.
You've got a name for your fans.
Another one bites the dust, baby boy.
Let's play the rest of the question. Let's see what he finishes with. I'm interested to see where this is going to go.
Number one MMA podcast out there. Well, and as for my question, it's for you, Michael Bisping. I want to know who is one fighter you wish you could have fought pre your UFC time, during your UFC time, and after your UFC time. Because I know I would have loved to see fights between you and Tito Ortiz, Rich Ace Franklin, and Forrest Griffin. What's yours?
First of all, let me also say, the way he edited it, he couldn't nail this question in one take, so he had to edit together multiple takes. This guy's a serial killer. Hide your children because this guy's fucking coming for you. Whatever school that he teaches at, I saw his little fucking thing, his little shameless plug with his combat school right there. Don't go because he's going to hurt you. I don't trust this guy at all. And I already know the answer, okay, for you, Mr. Bisping.
What is the answer?
Brendan Schaub. We discussed this already. Obviously, he's the one fight. There's only one.
Stop perpetuating this beef between us and Fighter and the Kid. Stop it.
I will stop taking digs because you've had this conversation before. You're like, you know what? I love Brendan. I look up to Brendan. You said this to me off air, okay? You said, I look up to Brendan Schaub as a comedian, as a performer, podcaster, and as a fighter. Honestly, his jiu-jitsu is unmatched. Michael Bisping's words. But I will say, I will come to your side, Mr. Bisping. Okay, I will be convinced if they will come onto our show as guests. I don't even want to do their show. I just want them to come on our show as guests, and we can sit down, have a conversation like dudes, make each other laugh. I'll be in California next month.
We don't even have the potential to do that.
Why?
Because we're not in a set studio. We haven't got a high class operation like those guys. We're on opposite sides of the country, Lewis. I wish we could have them on as guests, but we can't do it.
I'll make it happen. You don't think I can find a studio? Are you fucking crazy? This is what I do.
I know. Stop it. Anyway, I just want to say today I've had a blazing headache and I've been happy to let Lewis do a lot of the heavy lifting. When we're back in a couple of days, I'll be back on form. I'll have had a good night's sleep. I will not have a cloudy sensation over my brain and I won't have a blazing headache. I'll be ready to go. I'll be firing on all cylinders and I will be back, baby boys. To answer that guy's question, I don't know, but thank you. We appreciate the effort. Good luck with the combat school. Thank you for the very, very nice words. And I guess on that note, we'll say adios, amigos, and we'll see you on, when is it?
Friday,
we'll do a pre-show. We'll talk about that stuff. And send your questions in. Thanks for listening. All that good stuff. Lewis Harrington and Brian. Muchas gracias, amigos.